Hello, and thank you for joining us for today's CIO live stream. We are coming to you live from the global headquarters of the world's best capitalized bank, headquartered in the world's best capitalized country. We're going to discuss numerous topics today with a cavalcade of stars. We'll start with our live stream on LinkedIn, and then we'll go to a client-only portion. I wanted to start with Dominic, and Dominic, paint a picture about how we see inflation and interest rates and the trends that we're looking at there and what we're expecting going forward.
Well, Mark, if you look at the latest inflation print, they definitely have been a little bit more sticky, if you can go to the next slide. But I think the overall story that inflation should truly decelerate further, I think that remains in place. We do have different moving parts, particularly in the US, where some elements on the rent side or car side has been surprising to the upside. But I would say by and large, we should see inflation in the US going sub, 3% into next year. You see also here a little bit more disinflationary trend in Europe that obviously has to do with the fact that the economy is showing a little bit of a softer tone. So we have seen here that element coming down. I would say overall, big picture, the easy part is done. The hard part is probably still a little bit ahead of us, because simply to get that inflation, particularly on the services down, we also need to soften the economy a little bit more. And I think the central bank know that. You also see here a little bit of our projection. So disinflation continues, but the pace is obviously moderating. What does it mean for central banks? If you look at the next slide, yep, they are ready to cut. I think that's one of the key messages, and that's partially, or that's reflected in some of the futures market, if you look at what is priced in, but it's also our view. So you'll look at, for example, when we expect the next central bank to cut, clearly all the focus is falling on the ECB. So I think even though there are a little bit doubts, I think the ECB can start cutting steadily overall for the second half towards the end of the year. We do expect the ECB to cut by 75 to 100 basis points, a little bit more what the market is looking for. But other central banks should follow, as it's clear that this disinflation tendency is likely to continue. And maybe in some of the economies, we see a little bit of softness coming out of the labor market. So by and large, lower rates ahead, partially priced, maybe latest pricing is a little bit undemanding to the downside. And I think that gives us a lot of room to think about more pro-growth into the second half of the year.
Okay, well, that's the economic picture. But what does that mean for currencies and commodities?
Well, if you think about who can cut first, next, I mean, obviously, the ECB is expected to cut, as I mentioned. The Fed here has a little bit more room to wait. So we're looking at the Fed more to come to cut in September here, and pricing is even looking for less. I would say if you look at how the dollar has performed, I think shifts in short-term US rate really shape EXY shaped the dollar more broadly. So you might say, if that is the case, the dollar is likely to get a lot of yield support. And I think it is. So dollar likely to remain well bid into the third quarter. And I think that's also what we're guiding for. Now, the reason for the dollar not to really rally from here is maybe important to recognize the starting point. Keep in mind that the dollar is already richly priced. And I think that's an important part. Although the Fed is maybe a little bit late, the fact that the Fed stands ready to cut, if things are going to go a little bit less supportive, particularly on the growth side, gives me this Fed put, I would say. And I think that speaks a little bit for pro-growth currencies. So what we are watching here is not just the development on rates, but obviously also what's the growth outlook. And I brought you here a little bit some of these surprise indices. And although they have leveled off, particularly in the US, I do think the case is building that the narrative for the second half of the year is a little bit more constructive, potentially outside the US. And I think that gives underlying support for the notion that, look, dollar should top out. So for example, euro dollar finds a bottom at 105, or you think about the Swissie finding a top at 0.92. What does it mean beyond the dollar, which I said should be well bid, and at some point finding a top? Well, if you go to the next slide, you're thinking about the carry. Kerry still dominates, although lately we haven't seen that one manifesting in just all the high yielders doing extremely well. But if you generally look at Kerry strategies, they have been extremely successful. And I think that's something that is likely to continue. And I think in that context, you want to own the Aussie, you want to think about Brazilian real, you want to look at some of the high yielding currencies in your portfolio. Now, last point, maybe on the commodities side very quickly. Commodities are all linked about the cycle. So what we truly need in the second half of the year is about, do we get the lift in manufacturing? If you go next slide, you clearly see how commodities perform with some of the PMIs. So do get a signal that things are bottoming out. The question is it truly going to lift? But if you have lower rates, with lower rates, you're not going to go eat more. You're not going to travel more, but there will be a point where you will going to make more investments. So there is a CapEx story, I think, that lies ahead, and that speaks well for commodities. If I look at bottom up, our view, maybe next slide, just to summarize some of the return expectations, we do look for a fair bit of return, almost 10% on a total return basis. Half of it comes from the cash collateral, but also the other half is still higher commodity prices on the spot side. And what does it mean concretely? This is what you see here on the chart on the left side is more on the index level. But if you think about gold heading to 2,700, oil going back towards, I would say, $90 per barrel when we think about Brent, but on copper, for example, heading to 12,000. So clearly an interesting backdrop for that asset class, and an asset class that has been lately less correlated with equities. And I think that adds some appeal to it. Back to you, Mark.
All right, thanks, Dominic. Now we're going to go to Kevin. Kevin, we went into this, last week and this unbelievable focus on NVIDIA, positive on tech, positive on AI, and it's a good thing. NVIDIA's up another 5% today. Can you help us put this trend into some sort of perspective?
Yeah, Mark, thanks. That's a great question. I would say, you know, when we look at NVIDIA's results and consensus expectations, clearly embeds a lot of strong growth as per consensus. But when I think about NVIDIA and what it might mean for our overweight in technology and how we're thinking about the AI, the AI spending environment more generally, you know, I think if you're excited about NVIDIA, you should actually be more excited about the downstream implications of NVIDIA's success. So we see estimates that call for about $200 billion in GPU spending. GPUs are chips that are often used in AI training and AI inferencing. That $200 billion estimate, that's the total of 2023, 24, and 25. And I think it's an important number because investors have been really struggling to understand how AI will monetize, how all this investment in chips will monetize. And I think what was important coming out of NVIDIA's earnings was something that management said, where they said every dollar spent on GPUs should generate $5 of revenue over the next 4 years. And I think that gives us a really good sense for how large this market could be over time. And I would actually argue that 5x multiplier on every dollar of GPU spent could actually be a bit higher.
Okay, that's pretty bullish. What should investors be doing now then?
Well, again, I think we should be thinking about the downstream implications of all this GPU investment. And if we look at the rest of the IT sector, we think there's a big story there of beneficiaries. So as we look at the IT sector, and you see this in the slide that we have on screen, the IT sector, excluding NVIDIA, when we back out NVIDIA, we're still going to have very strong earnings growth. Low double digits in 24 and an expectation for an acceleration in 2025 up into the mid-teens. So what we would really think about is who's going to benefit from putting these GPUs to work. And what we would do is we would point investors towards SaaS companies, software as a service companies. We think they have some unique qualities that I don't think we've seen in other technology cycles. So first off, they're the incumbents. They're already large. They already have, you know, solid core businesses. They already have relationships with, you know, a wide breadth of customers. And they're able to generate these incremental AI-driven revenues with what I would say is a minimum of friction versus for their customers. If a customer is a SaaS customer, they don't have to invest in a data center. They don't have to buy servers. They don't have to buy networking and storage. They just sign a contract and are able to utilize AI as a service with against their own proprietary data. And we do think that it is proprietary data that ultimately drives value and economic creation in AI. So, you know, if we flip to the next slide, I think what we see is a pretty attractive valuation story for the IT sector, excluding NVIDIA. And what you see there is that's the gray line. We're trading at about 27 times. It's about a 45% premium versus the S&P excluding technology. I get it, that could seem a little bit rich. It's actually a modest, very modest discount to where we've been on a relative basis over the past year. But I would also argue that it's justified by the excess growth that we're gonna see in the IT sector, excluding NVIDIA, when we compare it to the rest of the S&P 500. I think it's also justified by the strong returns on equity, these healthy balance sheets that many technology companies enjoy, along with really solid free cash flow generation. So we're clearly excited about the AI trend, AI adoption, and we're actually even more excited for what NVIDIA's success means downstream of NVIDIA and what that success may mean for the rest of the sector.
All right. That's great, Kevin. Thank you. And this is going to conclude our public portion of the broadcast. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.